Have you ever watched a movie where an actor or actress you had written off as mediocre suddenly surprised you with a brilliant performance? Have you ever gone back and watched an older film with an actor or actress who is now a genuine star and been wowed at how far they'd come in their skills, commitment, and presence? Maybe you've just been pleasantly shocked when a star who was known for comedy suddenly took on a dramatic role, or vice versa, and did well. If you've had any of these experiences at the movies, then please join our next Midday on Film Hour with Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. From subpar to movie star, next on Midday after the news. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks for sticking around for the second hour of our show today. Well, few would have guessed from his roles as Roseanne's supervisor on the comedian's sitcom, or the lead in the campy 80s horror comedy sequel Return of the Killer Tomatoes, that George Clooney would go on to become one of the most lauded and in-demand movie stars of our time. Even as Dr. Doug Ross on the 90s NBC hospital drama ER, Clooney gave few hints that he had real star appeal and the ability to move audiences with his acting chops. But somewhere along the line, George Clooney managed to win over Hollywood and convince casting directors to give him roles that showcase his capability as a serious actor. More recently, Matthew McConaughey has shocked audiences and critics alike with his move from bare-chested romantic comedy stalwart to versatile actor capable of handily tackling a variety of challenging roles, including Rust Cole of HBO's True Detective series and Ron Woodruff in 2013's Dallas Buyers Club, which earned him an Academy Award for Best Actor. Who would have thunk it? Anyway, many actors are subject to paying their dues and taking goofy character actor jobs. A lot of them start on TV, or they play those easy-on-the-eyes sidekicks, and it isn't until they're given the opportunity to shine that we're able to realize their previously unknown abilities as a performer. So today on Midday on Film with our regular critics, Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed, we take a look at the times an actor or actress managed to shock us with their transformation from subpar to movie star. And we want to hear from you this hour, our listeners, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org. Was there an on-screen performance that changed your perception of an actor or actress when they shifted from light fare to more demanding jobs, when they went from meh to hey, that's pretty good? If you want to join us, please give us a call this hour. Our toll-free long-distance number, good from anywhere in the country, including Hollywood, 866-661-9309. Christopher Llewellyn Reed is chair of the Film and Video Department at Stevenson University right here in Baltimore County, and Linda DeLibero is director of Film and Media Studies at the Johns Hopkins University right up the street from our studios. Nice to have you back on the show. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Dan.
And hello, Chris.
Hi, Dan.
I'm the founder of this feast. It was kind of my idea because I've gone through this with Clooney. I've gone through it with Brad Pitt. And I said, Linda and Chris, has this happened to you before? I think it was Matthew McConaughey that kind of put us over the top with this idea this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, we all remember Matthew McConaughey's rom-com hell that he descended into in the late 90s and stayed there for basically the remaining decade, first part of the millennium. And then suddenly in 2011, I was watching this film, The Lincoln Lawyer, which I thought would just be a standard run-of-the-mill thriller. And there was Matthew McConaughey delivering an actual performance, and my jaw dropped. And then from that time on, he's just been wowing me in almost every film.
It was the McConaissance.
McConaissance, Linda.
They call it.
And so you noticed too, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I had a very similar experience, except my revelation came a little bit later than Chris's. I was very vocal about being, I hated this guy, mm-hmm. on his on-screen persona. And then he started to use that persona in these very interesting roles. And I remember within weeks of each other, I saw two movies, Killer Joe and Magic Mike. This was in 2012, yes. And it completely turned around my opinion. He gives extraordinary performances in both of these films. And in both films, he plays off that sleazy, kind of oily, semi-good old boy, disgusting thing that he's had going since Dazed and Confused, where it was used to great purpose by Richard Linklater. That was his real first breakout movie, and then he had this period when he was doing very interesting, respectable roles that lasted for a couple years, and then boom, that was done.
So what happens? Does an actor say, listen, I don't want to do these brainless romantic comedies anymore? He tells his agent. The agent says, what are you talking about? You're making all this money. They have an argument. Someone throws, you know, a margarita at each other, and then they settle it, and they say, okay, I'll try to sell you as a serious actor. Is it something like that happen?
I think it could be for some actors. I remember reading a review, an interview with Matthew McConaughey shortly after 2012, when the, you know, Magic Mike and Killer Joe and all these films started to bring him real attention, and he said that it wasn't so simple as that. He just noticed that he was starting to say no to scripts, that he'd just gotten tired without really realizing it, that if he had to make another romantic comedy with another actress du jour, that he was probably just going to go crazy. So he just started saying no. And then eventually a script came his way that seemed interesting, and that's how we ended up seeing him in these far better quality movies.
And in pretty rapid order, as Linda was saying.
Yeah.
Here's a film, a clip from a film only 8 years old, 2006, Failure to Launch. Matthew McConaughey, he's a 30-something slacker. He's living at home with his parents, and he thinks, they're setting him up with his dream girl so he'll get out of the house or something like that.
That's right. He doesn't realize that they've hired Sarah Jessica Parker to seduce him and make him fall in love so he'll want to leave home. And in this scene, they're actually in a chair store, and she's lounging in a Barca lounger, and he sits down next to her. And he has no idea that his parents have set this up.
Oh, there's what you're talking about.
It's nice, huh?
Yeah, I make fun of my parents, but these babies are sweet.
I'm Paula.
I'm Tripp.
You know, usually I don't sleep with someone on the first date.
Oh, I don't think this counts as a first date.
It would be a date if you asked me to have a drink tonight.
Mm-hmm. You want to have a drink tonight?
Can't. How about lunch tomorrow?
Sure. Wait, tomorrow's Saturday.
Sometimes I eat on Saturdays.
No, I'm doing something with my nephew.
Oh.
How about Monday?
I'll meet you here.
Beautiful.
Okay, yeah, we get the idea. So that's the old Matthew McConaughey, right? We're probably not going to see him again.
Oh, we hope not, because okay. He was just going through the motions there.
Okay, well, you mentioned the Lincoln Lawyer. All right, so we have a clip from that. Go ahead and set this one up, because this is where the contrast comes, at least for you. This is your, what did you call it? A
reconnaissance.
A reconnaissance.
And this caught me totally by surprise. It caught me by surprise. I was watching this on Netflix, you know, just why not? And in this film, he plays a lawyer who rides around in his Lincoln, hence the title Lincoln Lawyer. And he's kind of sleazy, and yet he has a moral awakening in the film. And in this scene, he's talking to a client of his, played by Michael Peña, who's being set up by the villain in the film to serve time for the crime the villain committed. And they're having this dialogue in the scene, and it turns out that Michael Peña's being set up to get the death penalty.
Look, if all you did was have sex with her, then why didn't you leave any prints, huh? I mean, the place was wiped down, clean.
I didn't wipe it down, though.
You left semen on the towel? You remember that? Did you forget the towel?
No, I didn't forget anything, man. I just used that towel, I paid her, and I left.
A defense they ain't gonna make.
Dude, don't say that!
It won't make, man. There's not a chance in hell with that defense. You know what they're asking for?
What?
They want the death penalty, man. They want to take your ass down. They want to burn you, man. Listen, I can see to it that never happened, but not if you don't plead.
Oh, you want me to say I did it?
There's a deal to be made here, and I can do it. I can get you life. Life means you're paroled in 15. It keeps the needle out of your arm, man. It's our only play, man.
So I think you can hear there that whatever one may think of the film, it's certainly a more emotionally committed performance than what we just heard opposite Sarah Jessica Parker. And it really affected me, saying, wow, this guy, something's happening.
Now, the same year is a film called, I'm sorry, the next year, 2012, is a film called Mud, and you wanted us to listen to this for some emphasis on McConaughey?
Yes, absolutely, and I'd love to hear Linda's thoughts on Mud, too. I remember watching this and also being blown away by his performance, and he has a great co-star in a young kid, Ty Sheridan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's, you know how they say, you never act with kids because they'll steal every scene from you, but in this film, it's very well balanced. He's mesmerizing. And
McConaughey's mesmerizing.
And he does not get his scene stealed away by by the children. So, I was, this only confirmed my feeling that somehow this guy got smart. He was looking pretty, and I think that's what it kind of boils down to. Are you a smart actor? A lot of people don't think about actors and their intelligence in terms of their ability to choose scripts and their ability to turn down the big money. Those are two crucial things that really have nothing to do with your talent. And those are the two things that I think make more difference for an actor than anything else. Are you smart enough to choose good screenplays? And are you wise enough to understand that sometimes money is not as important as your career and your reputation.
And savvy moviegoers appreciate that.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they can sense when you're tired on screen and not giving your all. So in this scene, this is early in the film, and he basically meets, he's a drifter called Mud, and he meets these two boys on an island. I forget what state they're in the South, and they have the ensuing dialogue, and they think he's just a hobo, but he takes offense at that.
Now, I like you two boys. You remind me of me. Seeing as how you two is from Arkansas, and we know some of the same people, and we grew up in some of the same places, I reckon we can make a deal for something.
A deal for what?
Food. Food for a boat.
He's a bum, Ellis. Come on. Why don't you go get your own food?
Well, I would if I could. See, I told somebody I'd meet him here, so. Well, I'm stuck for now, and what I got's running low.
He's a bum, Ellis. Come on.
I ain't no bum. I got money, boy. You can call me a hobo because a hobo will work for his living. You can call me homeless because, well, that's true for now. But you call me a bum again, I'm going to teach you something about respect your daddy never did.
Well, we've gotten through case number one. Case study number one, Matthew McConaughey. Have you ever watched a film where an actor and actress you had written off as mediocre suddenly surprised you with a brilliant performance? This is Midday on Film. Dan Roderick's here with Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. We welcome your calls this hour if you'd like to make an entry here. 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. My entry is George Clooney, which may seem obvious to a lot of people, although some people may say, oh, I thought he was a great actor from the beginning. No, I didn't feel that way. I remember him on ER. I remember, this is a really good-looking guy, number one. The women must love this guy because he's so good-looking. I remember him on a TV show called Sisters. Mm-hmm. He had that role as the hunk supervisor in Roseanne's factory where she worked, right? That was George Clooney, if you remember. And if you don't remember, there's a photograph of him on my Facebook page. I just thought, you know, nobody that good-looking could be a great actor, first of all. Maybe that was it for me. But I thought he was kind of thin. I didn't think there was much there. And some time went by, and I get to the Coen Brothers film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I thought, wow, this is George Clooney's very good in this. He's like Clark Gable or something in this movie, A Fugitive in the South, in this musical film of the Coen Brothers. I was impressed with that. And then a few years later, we get to Michael Clayton, where he plays a fixer, right? Mm-hmm. He works for a big law firm that's in the middle of some scandalous mess, and he's the guy that cleans things up. He's this spooky guy, a very troubled guy, sort of worn out kind of guy. I love the character. He cleans things up. And in the opening scene of the movie, Michael Clayton, I think it's right in the very beginning, he has to kind of fix things for one of the lawyers in the law firm who's hit somebody with his car and left the scene of the accident, right? So Clooney gets the call in the middle of the night to go to his lawyer's house. He talks to him in the kitchen about what's going to happen.
Cops like hit and runs. They work them hard, they clear them fast. Right now there's a BCI unit pulling paint chips off a guardrail. Tomorrow they're going to be looking for the owner of a custom-painted, hand-rubbed Jaguar XJ12. And the guy you hit, if you got to look at the plates, won't even take that long.
Oh my God.
There's no play here. There's no angle, there's no champagne room. I'm not a miracle worker, I'm a janitor. The math on this is simple. The smaller the mess, the easier it is for me to clean up.
That's the police, isn't it?
No. They don't call.
And by the time we get to the end of Michael Clayton, the final scene with Tilda Swinton at the end of that movie, and when he walks out of the hotel and gets in a car, and he doesn't say a word. He is really acting without speaking a word. And that, I remember thinking, wow, that's George Clooney.
The final take is a long take.
It is.
Just his face in the car for a really long time, and you see his eyes, and that's it. I mean, that he's acting without any props or dialogue or anything, and it's really stunning, really memorable,
and very convincing. Finally, for me, anyway, that this is George Clooney. He's a serious actor. Whatever happened there, I'm glad it happened. Since then, we've seen the Descendants. I think was last year, the year before. Mm-hmm. Another terrific film. What's another one? I'm not thinking.
He was in Syriana.
Oh, Syriana.
You know, my favorite from the late '90s, once he left the television world, was early in this trajectory of great performances, was Out of Sight. Even something simple like that. It marked the beginning of his collaboration with the director Steve Soderbergh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with you. I think he's a great presence. And going back to what Linda said, he chooses his scripts, for the most part, very carefully and smartly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what helps elevate his career, too.
And I also think that coming up slow the way he did is a serious advantage for actors / celebrities. I remember reading a few years ago a comparison between Tom Cruise and George Clooney, who basically started around the same time, and look at their respective careers, and what's the difference? And part of the difference, as this author pointed out, was that Tom Cruise got famous when he was very young, and not slowly enough to develop a sense of what he should be doing, where his career path should be going, who should be in charge of his career. And on the other hand, we have Clooney, who never really gets started until, his mid-30s?
At least, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's been around for a long, long time, and he's a smart guy, and he makes the right choices. And, you know, I don't think he's necessarily a great actor, but he is great at choosing what to do next, and creating a public persona that earns him respect with fans and his fellow celebrities. It's kind of
well
miraculous.
Well stated, Linda. Thank you. And Up in the Air is another film I could throw in here.
That's quite good.
In the last couple of years. And you'll appreciate this email. I'm sorry, this is Laura posting on Facebook. I want to read her comments here. She makes a reference to Tom Cruise here. But she says, and she goes back to another TV show for us. I mentioned ER that Clooney was in. She mentions St. Elsewhere. She says, of all the young doctors who went through their grueling first year at St. Elsewhere, I wouldn't have guessed Denzel Washington was the one to have the breakout career. I fell in love with, she says, now she changes the subject. She says, I fell in love with both Emma Thompson and Kenneth Branagh in the BBC series Fortunes of War, and was thrilled that they each went on to give so many illustrious performances. When I watched the show Bosom Buddies, I would not have laid money on Tom Hanks becoming the movie star of that duo. And the last time I saw the other guy was in a single scene on The West Wing. But I think my favorite, biggest surprise of all has been Woody from Cheers.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, thank you very much. Who was also in that HBO series, True Detective. And then finally on Tom Cruise, she says, going perhaps in the other direction, I adored Tom Cruise in Risky Business, but I think he peaked there. Obviously, Hollywood thinks otherwise. But Linda, to your point about Tom Cruise, thank you very much. We'll take our first break here. It's Midday on Film. Dan Roderick's here with Linda DeLibro and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. Out of nowhere, we didn't see them coming, from some subpar to movie star, the actors and actresses who convinced you after a long period of meh that they were really good. 410-662-8780.
Baby.
What is that we're listening to, Chris?
That, I believe, is Marky Mark.
That would be Mark Wahlberg.
That would be Mark Wahlberg.
In his previous life?
In his previous life, before he became known as a well-regarded actor.
So Mark Wahlberg makes our list here of stars we didn't think too much of, and then suddenly, pow. Right, Linda?
Is he? Oh, God. Right? Such a surprise.
Mark Wahlberg.
And what an extraordinary story. I mean, this was a kid, grew up in Southie, Boston, and he was a coke addict at 13. At 16, he was jailed for attempted murder. He was a racist. Some of his crimes were involved beating up African-Americans and Vietnamese people in the neighborhood, really nasty character. And he gets out of jail. Well, he goes to jail, and I guess that's where the revelation came. Is this really what I want to do with my life? And he walks out of jail, and that's the end of that. And he starts this musical career. His brother, Donnie, has preceded him with New Kids on the Block. He gets a gig there. That's kind of crazy, too.
Yeah.
And then he has, you know, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. And in we remember him, at least I do, from those Calvin Klein underwear commercials. And then all of a sudden, he's in Boogie Nights, this great film by P.T. Anderson, performing in this incredible role and doing a spectacular job of it.
Excuse me, Jack?
Yeah.
I was thinking about what the Colonel was saying, you know, about my name.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering if you had any ideas.
I had some thoughts on it, yeah. What about you? What do you think?
Well, my idea was, you know, I just want a name. I want it so we can cut glass, you know, like razor sharp.
Razor sharp, right.
Yeah, well, when I close my eyes, I see this thing. It's like this big sign. And the name is in, like, bright blue neon lights with, like, purple outline. And this name is just so bright and so sharp that the sign, it just blows up because the name is just so powerful. It says Dirk Diggler.
I think heaven has sent you here, Dirk Diggler. I think the angels have blessed us all because of you.
So this Boogie Nights, 1997. He's a young man having an adventure in the porn industry.
That's right. He's a budding porn star, and in that scene, he's sitting in a hot tub with John C. Reilly, who's silent in the scene, and Burt Reynolds, who's the producer of the porn films. And it's a moment when he leaves his old name behind and takes on his persona as Dirk Diggler.
And I love Mark Wahlberg in The Departed. I thought he was so convincing as a Massachusetts state cop in internal investigations guy. I thought he was great in that movie. And then we get to The Fighter in 2010 with Christian Bale. We have a clip from that. We'll just do that for emphasis too. But he's there.
Absolutely. And what's great about this clip is you get to hear Amy Adams, who's another, you know, potential candidate on this list.
Oh yeah, and, we're going to talk
and
about
Melissa
Amy
Leo.
Yeah.
You know, these are all people that some people might see equally as surprising.
Yeah.
And in this scene, Mark Wahlberg has been, he's the fighter and the boxer who has family trouble, shall we say, a very dominant mother and a brother who's a crystal meth addict. And they're holding him back, and he's been taking refuge in his girlfriend's house, played by Amy Adams. And here, both he and she walk out of the house only to be confronted by Melissa Leo, who's angry that he's abandoned the family.
Hi.
Well, 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 look at this.
Look at what?
Why are you hiding from us, Mickey?
He's not hiding.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to my son. What are you doing next to, huh?
I'm right here. I ain't hiding from nobody else.
Well, you're not helping yourself with your father's scumbag friend, Lenano. What are you gonna do? Turn your back on Dickie next, huh? All we ever wanted for you was to be world champion.
Mickey's a grown man. He can think for himself.
Shut your mouth.
Skank. Don't call me skank. I'll rip that nasty hair right out of your f***ing head.
I'm his mother and his manager.
You're not my manager anymore. And I'm not waiting for Dickie, okay? I'm not getting any younger.
Who's going to look after you, sweetheart?
Me?
Come on. I know you don't understand it, but I had 9 kids. And I love every one of you the same.
Yeah. great movie. And Melissa Leo, Academy Award nomination, and she won.
She won, yeah. And it's interesting because Christian Bale, who plays the brother, had the flashier role. And I mean, he's a great actor. And he won the Academy Award. And Mark Wahlberg's performance was almost universally cited as being a non-performance because next to Christian Bale, he's so still and quiet, and to me, that's the sign of a really good actor, that you can just be and have the presence to convey exactly who this character is, and that's what he does in this movie. I think he's kind of extraordinary in this film.
Amy Adams is on Linda DeLibero's list of out-of-nowhere stars, and we're going to talk a little bit more about her in just a minute. This is Midday on Film with Linda and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. We want to include our listeners in this, so please call in 410-662-8780. If you've had an experience like this with an actor, an actress, somebody that you didn't think too much of, and then suddenly one day all the lights go on and you say, well, this person's really good. Tony in Baltimore, we'll go to you first. Hi, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Good.
I enjoy your show.
Thanks.
So look, I love good movies, and bad movies make me sad. So you guys can help me out because one of my problems is I can't remember names. But there's three people I want to mention, and one of them I knew about. He was a good actor. I just don't think he did enough play, and that's Woody Harrelson. The movie that he played in with Christian Bale, where Christian Bale's brother got killed, you know, he was in the Army. He came home. He was doing some boxing, illegal street fighting, and he got killed by Woody Harrelson. And I thought Woody should have got an Oscar nomination for his performance in that. Do you know what movie I'm speaking about?
Yes, but neither of us can think
of it. They can't think of it either. Tony, did you want to talk about Brad Pitt? Because I wanted to talk about him.
Oh, Brad Pitt, yes, I'm sorry. And Brad Pitt in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, I was really surprised with his performance then. I didn't think he had that much depth, but he did a wonderful job in that movie.
Yeah, he was. He's on my short list, too, as a guy that I'm still sort of surprised at how good he is because I don't know what happened. I mean, in the beginning, maybe it was Legends of the Fall or something. I just wasn't convinced.
Yeah, although if you go back to one of his first screen appearances in Thelma and Louise, even then you realize this guy has, you know, potential and real screen presence.
I'll look at it again.
But I agree with you that for a long time he didn't show what he was really capable of. And the film where he really blew me away was Moneyball,
where
he was robbed because they gave the Oscar to an actor I enjoy, Jean Dujardin, the French actor. But it was not the same caliber of performance as Brad Pitt in Moneyball.
I'm with you on that, too. I even liked him in Burn After Reading, mm-hmm. too, the Coen Brothers
film.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
It's very funny, anyway, thank you for that. And if we can think of this other film, a Woody Harrelson, Christian Bale film, can we look it up, please? Are we doing that in the control room? Oh, well, you could just type it on the screen for me, and I could give the title to the listeners. In the meantime, we'll go to Dana in Lutherville. Dana, thank you for calling Midday on Film.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to nominate Sally Field. She went from Gidget to the Flying Nun to Smokey and the Bandit to Norma Ray and Mary Todd Lincoln. Heck of a career.
That's right, Mary Todd Lincoln. That's exactly
and
right.
And don't forget, her turnaround was a made-for-TV film called Sybil. And it was about a woman who had something like 15 personalities. And this was right after Flying Nun. And she just shocked a nationwide audience because she played all 15 characters very differently, and that was no one thought this woman
Thank
could
you
act.
For reminding me of that, Linda. And also
stunning.
The Flying Nun. I don't know if folks know what we're talking about. People of a certain age do, but there'll be some youngsters out there who would have to go look this up. But Sally Field playing a nun who could fly. Her habit actually helped her gain lift, I believe. Right,
and Sally Field is one of those actresses who can elevate a mediocre project just by her performance. And she's in a film opening today, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where she plays Aunt May, and she's quite good in that role, too. So she continues to deliver great performances.
Hey, I want to read some emails that we've got here. Flying Nun Sally Field, also mentioned by Mark on our Facebook page. Here's an email from Ralph who says, Halle Berry in Spike Lee's Jungle Fever played a crackhead. A no-big-deal performance, actually, for me. Just basic then, but who knew she'd become a megastar in films such as her Academy Award-winning Monster's Ball? So, I don't know. How do you feel about that one? Halle Berry, Monster's Ball.
I think that's a one-off. I honestly don't think she's a great actress.
Okay.
Maybe she had great direction.
Well, it kind of fits the description of the show today, because another part of this was that one singular performance where you went, wow, this person really has something. Now, you know, as for the rest of their career, at least they showed it there. My nomination for that particular category is Richard Farnsworth, who was a character actor, mm-hmm. a stuntman in old Hollywood, right?
He
played the Gray Fox in the 1980s, which mm-hmm. is a very, very good movie, but mostly it was a character actor. And then we get to a movie in 1999, I think, or 2000, a David Lynch film called The Straight Story. And Richard Farnsworth, I believe he got an Academy Award nomination for that role.
Yeah, I can't remember, but he was quite good. I agree with you entirely. My entry into the one-off would be Hayden Christensen, who was so terrible in the second and third Star Wars prequels as Anakin Skywalker, and then in the 2003 film Shattered Glass, where he played Stephen Glass of the New Republic scandal. He delivered.
That's the same guy?
Yeah, he delivered an amazing performance, you know, given who was delivering it.
We have a clip from that?
We do, actually, if you want to...
Yeah, sure. Let's listen.
Yeah, so...
Do you need to set it up?
Yeah, just in this scene, he's being confronted by his editor, played by Peter Sarsgaard, who's beginning to discover that the facts in a controversial story that he published are just not adding up, and they're walking around this town in Connecticut trying to retrace his steps.
You know, I really don't like the way you're treating me, Chuck. It's like you won't even talk to me.
This is the place.
Yes. I didn't do anything wrong, okay? I didn't do anything wrong. You saw my notes. Everything was in there. I got tricked. I got fooled. I'm sorry. What are you being so mad for?
It was 10 people.
Yes.
For dinner.
Yes.
They're closed at 3 on Sundays.
Yeah, I know. I know. They almost didn't let us in. Okay, but it was a couple of minutes before 3, and Ian looked like he was about ready to cry, and so they said okay.
But for dinner?
Go in and ask them yourself, Chuck. Okay, go in and see if they would serve a party that came in at 2:58, and the answer would be yes, because that's when we got here.
The Forbes guys are going to have all this, too, and they're going to dig through the records
wrong,
at that office building. Okay, I'm sure they have surveillance cameras, and they're going to check them.
I didn't do anything wrong, Chuck.
I really wish you'd stop saying that.
So, as you can hear, Hayden Christensen is the one saying, I didn't do anything wrong. It's actually delivering a performance, which is far more than you could say in the second and third Star Wars films.
My brother Ed in Massachusetts is a real film buff. He loves movies, and he jumped right on this today. Of course, he had Tom Hanks in here from his silly TV roles to what he has become. And he mentions George Clooney. But he also mentions Oprah Winfrey, The Color Purple in 1985, Charlize Theron for Monster in 2003, and Cher. I'd forgotten about Cher. For Mask in 1985. She was excellent in that. And Moonstruck. I love her in Moonstruck in 1987. He also mentions Sally Field. And then Ed adds this, and my brother Ed, if you're listening, thanks for sending this in. Josh Brolin. Mm-hmm. He says, holy cow, where did he come from? Years and years of TV and B-movie roles to No Country for Old Men, American Hustle, W, where he played George W. Bush, and True Grit. Where did he come from?
Yeah, I mean, it really is an amazing, trajectory of the last 10 years. Although, Linda and I were talking about before the show began that he's got to be careful because he's also now starting to appear in some less fine roles, and we wouldn't want to see him disappear because he really has proven himself a very capable actor.
Yes, he came from James Brolin.
That is the right answer.
That's right. Thank you very much, Linda. We'll take a break here on Midday. We'll come right back for some more of this, but please feel free to join our conversation. Who is his mother? Who was James Brolin married to?
She was a model and an actress, but nobody.
Okay. Nobody famous.
Nobody famous.
All right.
Interesting.
410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. That film we were talking about, by the way, Christian Bale and Woody Harrelson, was Out of the Furnace in 2013 last year. Thank you very much for looking that up for us. A short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday on Film. Catherine wrote in to say, to mention Jennifer Lawrence in this. She says, I saw her in these movies, The Poker House, The Burning Plain, and Winter's Bone, and her acting was not good enough for me to be aware that she was not acting the whole time. It really stood out that way, even though the movies were interesting and compelling. She did not have that thing she has going on now, and her acting has improved so dramatically that it's incredible to me. Richard Gorelick, my colleague from the Baltimore Sun, the restaurant critic of the Baltimore Sun, sent in this. A few years ago, I finally watched The Outsiders, Francis Ford Coppola's longing and lovely adaptation of the S.E. Hinton novel, and it instantly became one of my favorite American movies. Ralph Macchio, who we all know as the Karate Kid, broke my heart. He's beyond amazing in this movie. Every bit as good, say, as Leonardo DiCaprio in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. So there we go. Ralph Macchio, thank you for that, Richard. In The Outsiders, where this performance sort of comes out of nowhere, Chris and Linda. Let's go to the phone lines and hear from some more of our listeners here. Jordan in Baltimore, you're up next. Hello.
Hi. I was going to suggest Jonah Hill in The Wolf of Wall Street just recently.
Very good. Jonah Hill. I have another email here. You want me to read this email from one of our listeners, Jordan?
Because
this listener agrees with you. This listener, this is Irwin, who says, my pick for this topic is Jonah Hill. He was given one small role in one small scene in Judge Apatow's The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and from there went on to co-star in the 2017 comedy Superbad. We actually have a clip from that? Okay.
Jules and her stupid friend came up to me, and they asked me to buy her alcohol. But not just her, for a whole party. You know what that means? By some divine miracle, we were paired up, and she actually thought of me. Thought of me enough to decide that I was the guy she would trust with the whole funness of her party.
And no one could have expected that he would go on to garner two Best Supporting Actor nominations at the Academy Awards in recent years. Let's see. The other guys who act with him, like Michael Cera, right? Seth Rogen, haven't come close to this kind of prestige from, what, Moneyball? That's one of them. Here he is in Moneyball, 2011.
The Visalia Oaks and our 240-pound catcher, Jeremy Brown, who, as you know, scared to run to second base. This was in the game 6 weeks ago. This guy's going to start him off with a fastball. Jeremy's going to take him to deep center. Here's what's really interesting, because Jeremy's going to do what he never does. He's going to go for it. He's going to round first, and he's going to go for it. Okay? This is all of Jeremy's nightmares coming to life.
Oh, they're laughing at him.
And Jeremy's about to find out why. Jeremy's about to realize that the ball went 60 feet over the fence.
Now, Jonah Hill, and this is the second time we mentioned Moneyball for the Brad Pitt reason. Chris.
Yeah, I think Jonah, I love this film, so I like everything about it, but I think Jonah Hill is equally as good as Brad Pitt, and particularly the chemistry between the two of them is what helps elevate the film. So he's great in the film, I agree.
410-662-8780 if you'd like to join our conversation here today with Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. And Linda, so I want to turn to you, go back to Amy Adams. So we heard a little bit of Amy Adams in The Fighter from 2010. And she's hot. You know, she's had a really several years here of stardom. I'm thinking of, Doubt, last year, American Hustle. She's terrific in American Hustle. But you want to go back a few more years to another role she had.
Well, she's not the actress who was bad or who was good and then bad, but she's the actress who is so sneaky in her transformations that she flew under the radar for such a long time, and it's amazing. She's sort of like George Clooney. She's been around forever, and she started out in dinner theater in Minnesota, and she went on to her first starring role in now I'm blanking on the name of the film about the beauty pageant. She would play in a role, and then everybody would say, ah, it's her breakout. And then she would end up playing in, she was in Drop Dead Gorgeous in 1999. And then the next year, she's in Psycho Beach Party. And then the next year, she's in Catch Me If You Can. And everybody says, wow, what a fresh young actress. And then she has to do a whole bunch of TV for years and years. And, you know, she's wandering in the wilderness and occasionally coming out with these extraordinary performances. And all of them are different. I guess what surprised me about her was that I knew of her from Enchanted. I think that's the first time she really got on my radar. And she's the good girl, sweet, kind of prissy girl next door. And that's her goody-goody persona, and she plays it to the hilt. And then all of a sudden, I see her in The Master, and she is delivering a performance full of depths and surprises and really a rich, rich performance that just came out of nowhere for me.
Well, let's compare those two, because we have a clip from Enchanted and one from The Master involving Amy Adams.
So in this clip from Enchanted, she's just fallen off of a rooftop where she was trying to climb into a billboard because it looked like a magic castle, because she's from an enchanted kingdom and she's been cursed to come to New York, which is hell, obviously, for an enchanted character. And she's going up with Patrick Dempsey to his apartment with his little girl in tow.
Morgan, show her the way, please.
Then the old hag told me that... the well and wish for my heart's desire, but I must have looked very far because I fell down, 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 and then I climbed out of this big round hole and I got very lost until I fell off of the castle, and now here I am with you.
Is this a big habit of yours, falling off stuff?
Boy, well, oh boy. So this is a long way to 2012 and The Master, which is the next clip.
And she's great in this film.
She's doing it. There's
a tenderness and a sweetness and a naivete that's absolutely irresistible in her performances. And she manages to use that in The Master. In the beginning, you think that she is that character, very guileless and sweet and kind of in this guy's thrall, who is based on, you know, the Scientologist L. Ron Hubbard. And then all of a sudden you see who she really is, and it's really something else.
What's the particular scene
So in this scene, things have just gone wrong for this group of quasi-Scientologists in the film, and they've sort of been confronted by naysayers in, I think they're in Boston or New York, and she's kind of very angrily dictating a response while her husband, the leader of the cult, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, is typing in the background.
And this is where we are at. At the lowest level, to have to explain ourselves. For what? For what we do, we have to grovel. The only way to defend ourselves is to attack. If we don't do that, we will lose every battle that we are engaged in. We will never dominate our environment the way we should unless we attack. And the city's just noise.
So, Amy Adams, here to stay.
She's a chameleon, and I don't think she gets... I mean, she's gotten Academy Award nominations, et cetera, but I don't think she gets her due. I think she's one of the greatest actors working today.
I could not agree more.
Allison writes in to mention Will Smith. One of my votes is for the impressive performances of Will Smith. He went from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to Ali. Thank you for that. Neil says, I didn't take Robin Williams seriously until Insomnia, where he is really creepy and understated. He started the move with Terry Gilliam's Fisher King. I agree with that performance of Fisher King of Robin Williams. Let's take a phone call. It's Ed in Towson, then Mary in Baltimore. Ed, go right ahead. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if this counts or not, but I've always been amazed at Frank Sinatra. I always enjoyed him more as an actor than a crooner for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And his Maturing Candidate and From Here to Eternity roles to me were like amazing. And I'd always wonder how a crooner like that turned out to be such a good actor. Of course, Bing Crosby did too. He had some good acting roles too. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, thank you very much. We overlook some of the older films with regard to this too. But, you know, Frank Sinatra's established crooner, great singer. And then he gets the movie role.
That was a famous instance that is memorialized in The Godfather with Johnny Fontaine.
Mm-hmm.
From Here to Eternity, Frank Sinatra's career as a singer was at that point in the dumper because the big band days were over. And he begged for that part in From Here to Eternity. I don't know if mafia ties were involved in getting him it, but there have been rumors about that. And then he delivers this performance that just shocks everyone. And from thenceforth, he is on top again and has a solid, serious career as an actor. And also, his singing career was revived by that role as well.
And your caller mentioned Bing Crosby, and I just want to say there's one film with Bing Crosby from the 50s called The Country Girl, opposite Grace Kelly, where he really surprised me because he delivered a real complex performance. So I recommend that film.
I want to recommend Copland. Sylvester Stallone. We know what Sylvester Stallone is and was and has been over the years. He's Rocky and some of those other roles, but Copland. It's a very good movie. It's a violent movie, so watch out. But Harvey Keitel, Ray Liotta's in it. De Niro's in it. But Sylvester Stallone really shines in this movie. You see Sylvester Stallone listed in an ensemble like that, and you say, "What's he doing there?" And boy, he just pulls it off so well in that. You almost wish you could have seen him in more roles like that.
Yeah, it's unlike anything he's ever done, and it's a real performance.
Mary in Baltimore with a nomination for this. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to mention all the actors that seem to have started on Seinfeld, including Bryan Cranston and Anna Dunn from Breaking Bad.
Okay. Bryan Cranston was what?
I am not an aficionado of
Seinfeld.
Yes, but I'm not an aficionado of his career. But speaking of Seinfeld, of course, we have Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's proven to be quite a phenomenal actor. She was very funny on Seinfeld, but boy, does she have range.
And what's the film she was in last year with James
Gandolfini?
Enough said.
She's delightful in that. Yeah.
Right. We had another one here. Peter Dinklage. Now, I don't think I ever saw him in a good role ever until Game of Thrones, writes Paulina, but Chris and I, we have a recommendation to make.
Yes, it's a film by Tom McCarthy, an actor and director, and his first feature is called The Station Agent, and it's a phenomenal film, and Dinklage is the lead role, if you think that he was not good until Game of Thrones, I strongly suggest you watch The Station Agent. You'll be blown away.
Linda, did you want to talk about Natalie Wood here for a moment?
Oh, Chris came up with that, and I wholeheartedly agree.
You agree with her?
That's a kind of one-off Splendor in the Grass.
Yeah, I mean, Natalie Wood, was an appealing screen presence, no question. But in Splendor in the Grass, 1961, film directed by Elia Kazan, she plays a young woman who's she has a nervous breakdown because her boyfriend, played by Warren Beatty, breaks up with her, and she just falls apart. And there are scenes in this film that are heart-wrenching as you watch this poor young woman struggle with love lost. I mean, she'll blow you away. If you thought you knew Natalie Wood, you have to see this film.
I agree with you. If you haven't seen Splendor in the Grass, make sure you see it. Warren Beatty, Pat Hingle is in that in that film.
And I think it's worth mentioning that sometimes the element is the director. I mean, directors, that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're directing actors. Elia Kazan, of course, was one of the greatest directors of actors, and they can elicit a performance from someone who may not be a good actor that completely transforms their image and is actually a fine performance.
One of the things we were talking about today and touched on a little bit in some of these later contemporary actors and actresses is television. Natalie Wood, I don't think, was on a TV show before she became a film actress. Same true for Frank Sinatra and people like that, even going back even further, of course. So you have people like Tom Hanks, so it shouldn't surprise you that they get a job in television. I'm sure they take any job they can get to get started, and that later on surprise us. Along those lines, Catherine says, Michelle Williams, who I did not watch in the teen show Dawson's Creek, but did dismiss her because of what I assumed was tepid teen angst acting, but I've been impressed to see her in some indies and large roles like Brokeback Mountain, Blue Valentine, Wendy and Lucy, and My Week with Marilyn. And Johnny Depp is another from teen TV hit 21 Jump Street and Nightmare on Elm Street to a quirky array of great films, including Ed Wood and Donnie Brasco, Edward Scissorhands, and others. So we're done for now. We'll see you again next month. Linda DeLibero from Johns Hopkins, Christopher Llewellyn Reed from Stevenson University join us once a month, always the first Friday of the month, for Midday on Film. Thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Great. Thanks, Dan. It was fun.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman in High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.